I'm Jesse. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Common Solution Group. I have a sponsor. Some of you guys may know him. And I sponsor other men. And more importantly, I'm always up front of the meeting to meet new people, to be potential sponsors from there. I was just telling Billy before the meeting, I used to speak once a week where I got sober at minimum. And I don't speak that often anymore, and I get nervous now. So I think maybe to get us started, I'll tell you guys my favorite sober alcoholic story. So I work with some guys that, in my opinion, they're lazy, right? And I'm working there one day, and I'm working with this guy, and he's working touch-up spackle on this one wall, and it is taking, I mean, he's been over there for 4 hours, and I've knocked like 3 or 4 things off of this list, and my head starts going, right? And I'm like, this lazy, this lazy, that, right? And all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? He's not going to out-lazy me, right? I'll show him. And I mean, I'm telling you, I wage full-on lazy war with this guy. And he has no idea I'm at war with him. But I mean, I've got a battle plan and everything, right? I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to go get something out of my car. And then on the way back, I might throw something away. And then I need to do this. And I have this full battle plan. It takes me about 15 minutes before I think to myself, I am an absolute lunatic. This dude has no idea that I'm even upset with him about any of this. Sorry. If you can relate to that story, you're probably in the right spot. So as you can probably hear, this isn't a Virginia accent. I grew up in Boston, and I had a pretty good childhood. You know, nothing crazy, nothing really stands out. And you know, I don't exactly remember the first time that I took a form of alcohol or took alcohol or drank anything, but I do remember the first time that it gave me that spiritual experience. And I was hanging out at a friend's house, and we got to drinking, and all of a sudden, like, I didn't have to think about how to act. I was the cool kid. I didn't have to think about what to say. I wasn't questioning whether or not I should have said it this way or should have said it that way 20 minutes later. I wasn't planning how I'm going to say it next time, right? All my fears fell from me, right? A lot of the promises in the big book happened in that moment. And I think that's when I first evidence of the phenomenon of craving was there then, because I didn't stop. That first drink insisted on the second insisted on the third demanded the fourth, and it kept on like that. And I saw consequences immediately from that night, and ended up in the hospital, and I was there for a few days. And I couldn't wait to do it again, right? Because what it was doing for me was way more important than what it did to me. And I chased that for a long, long time. And my alcoholism progressed pretty quickly. You know, I thought I was having fun, and next thing I knew, I was homeless, living in project hallways, washing windows at an intersection for money. And what this thing does to us is devastating, right? Like, it destroys everything worthwhile in life. And every relationship I ever had came secondary to drinking. If you got in the way of my drinking, I pushed you out of the way, right? If you cared about me, I hurt you. If you loved me, I really hurt you. And I dragged people through the mud. And it continued on like that for so long. And, you know, I was introduced to this program at a very young age. From that hospital visit, I ended up in an IOP at probably 13 years old. And I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm 13, and I'm not like you people. And this is... You guys are really overreacting here, right? Because I don't think that I need to be here, right? And it was from that point on, it was just, probation officers, principals, teachers, my mom, family members, girlfriends, all these people that wanted me to do well. And I would get pushed into these different treatment type programs at a young age. I went to the first sober high school. Well, most of you guys probably didn't even know that that was a thing. But the whole time I didn't know what I suffered from, right? Like I knew that like I liked the feeling that that stuff gave me, and I knew I wanted to feel like that at all times, right? As often as I could. And but I didn't see it. The only problem that I saw was consequences, right? If you guys would get off my back, then I'll be all right. If you guys just let me continue to do this, then I can feel like this all the time and we don't have any problems. It's really you guys. You guys are the problem, not me, right? And like I said, I was 18, 19 years old, homeless, living in project hallways, and I really didn't understand how I got there, but I couldn't stop at that point. And I would reach these breaking points where I had burnt up my life. I mean, clearly my life was burnt to the ground, but I had really like burnt it to the ground a little bit further. And I would reach this breaking point and I would go into treatment. And I wanted to stop. But again, I didn't know what I suffered from. I really didn't. And I would go in for a couple days and, sometimes I was just going in for a rest and I would put a couple pounds on or whatever it is. And then next thing you know, I'm back out. Or sometimes I would just be waiting for a check, right? Like food stamps got to come in eventually. So like whatever I can do to get the next one, I need a rest in between waiting for an easy way to get that next one. But all of these introductions or little bits and pieces of Alcoholics Anonymous, little things started to build up. And I don't think I realized it. I definitely didn't realize it then, but we live life forward and we understand it backwards. And I think I heard more than I like to give credit for. So there were a few times that, I went in and I really wanted to stay sober. And the way I like to put it is, it's like I lit a fuse, right? As soon as I put the alcohol down, I light this fuse, and I don't know how long this fuse is, right? And the longer that fuse is, all I do is I just drag more stuff into the blast radius, right? I drag more people into this blast radius. I drive more a job, a car, material things, more relationships, and I just drag them into this blast radius. And I have no idea that this fuse has been lit. And sometimes it's quick. And sometimes I only last a few days and that bomb goes off. And then other times I last 3 months and that bomb goes off. And the longer that fuse stays lit, the worse the damage is. And I just burn my life to the ground over and over. So there was one point that I was really serious and I needed to get out of South Boston. Because South Boston is the problem, clearly, right? Like I go into these projects and I get trapped in the projects and I can't figure out how to get out of them. And they're the problem, right? So I'm like, I gotta get out of here. And I go to this town called Fall River, Massachusetts. And I will forever be grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous in Fall River, Mass. Because they were talking about something different there. It wasn't the message that I was used to hearing, right? I used to come in and I would listen to what I thought I was hearing, and I'm sure people were sharing the solution. I'm sure people were sharing a message out of this book, right? But like what I was hearing more often was like meeting makers make it, right? Make 90 meetings in 90 days, right? Hold on to your seat until the miracle happens. And it just felt like I was doing time. Right. Like I would just, oh, it was just such a grind to just hold on to that seat for just another 24 hours, shoot for midnight. Right. And this is what is sticking in my head. And when I tried to get sober in Fall River, nobody was afraid to talk about God, right? I went into this meeting, and these people were talking about the power of God and what God had done for their lives. Nobody was afraid that bringing up God was going to scare off the newcomer. They were talking about amends, right? They were talking about getting things back in their life. And they were having a good time doing it. It didn't look like they were doing time. It didn't look like it was a struggle the whole time. It looked like it was almost easy, that it was exciting, right? And I was like, these people are talking about something different. And I had lost custody of my daughter at this point. And I moved to Alabama with my daughter because I thought that running away from Boston was the right move. And I'm going to start this new life, right? And I think this is the best decision of my life. And I'm abstinent. I'm not doing anything to treat my alcoholism, but I'm abstinent at the time. And I don't know that there's another solution out there. And I lose custody of my daughter in abstinence, and I can't wrap my head around it. I don't understand why I thought this was the best decision of my life. So when I get to this treatment center in Fall River, and I hear this message of hope, right? That maybe there's something out there, that because I've tried it all, right? I've tried the sponsor by name. I've tried the girl that's going to fix me. I've tried the good job. I've tried the new haircut, the new shoes. I've tried 90 meetings in 90 days, right? I've tried just shooting until midnight, and like midnight don't come quick enough for a guy like me. It just doesn't. And I've tried all these things that I thought were going to fix me. But I hadn't tried what those people were talking about, right? And I'm talking to this guy outside of the meeting, and I'm like, you know, like I get it. Like I understand these steps, this, that, the other. I'm like, but I don't really know about this God thing, right? Like I don't know. I don't know how to pray. It's not that I was really resentful at God, or that I didn't believe that there was a God. It was just like, that can't be the answer. Do you know what I mean? Like, that can't be it, you know? And he's like, well, he wasn't very soft with me. He said, this is a program of action, stupid. He said, pray in disbelief. Pray in spite that it's not going to work. Just pray. And the answer to why I had lost my custody of my daughter in abstinence when I thought I was making the best decision of my life was plaguing my life. And I could not wrap my head around it. So I didn't know what else to pray for. So I prayed for an answer to that. And this guy in this meeting raises his hand, and he stands up and he shares, and I don't remember anything else that this guy said, right? But he said that maybe God took his son from him to save his son from him. And it's not what you want to hear, right? But like I had just told you my track record, like if you love me, I really hurt you, right? I burn every relationship to the ground. I would have dragged this little girl through the mud, and who knows what she would have experienced. And that's the truth, right? As much as I don't want to admit it, and I don't want to feel that, and I don't want to think that of myself, that's look at the evidence of my life. It's what would have happened. And it's the answer that I needed to be like, okay, that guy told me to pray, and I prayed for an answer, and it's not the answer that I want, but like, it's an answer that I can get behind. It makes sense. As much as it sucks, it makes sense. So I asked that guy to sponsor me, and I was 9 months in at this point, without a drink, and I built some things up, and I hadn't done anything to treat my alcoholism except come to meetings. And so I asked this guy to sponsor me, and we read through the forwards, and we read through the doctor's opinion. I don't remember anything from the doctor's opinion. I was thinking about it on the way here. And what I do remember is reading through the forwards, where it says we have about a 75% success rate if we follow what's in this book. I do remember that. And within 2 days of that, that fuse went off, and I burnt it all to the ground again. But I knew that there was a solution out there, right? And what I've learned is, like, through all of these trials of coming in here, is that I have this window, right? That fuse, that window, right? And like I get a job and it shrinks. And I put a little weight on and it shrinks. And the family thinks I'm doing great because I put down the substance, right? I'm not drinking anymore. So the family thinks I'm doing great. So they start coming around again, right? And then if I get a girlfriend with a car and a place to live, that window's closed. That's my MO. I get healthy enough to get a girlfriend that has a place to live. That's what I did every single time. And I would burn that to the ground. So I knew I didn't have much time. This last time coming in, I knew that fuse was lit. But I stayed out for 10 years after that. And I felt like my life wasn't unmanageable because I never let it get bad enough that I was in project hallways washing windows at an intersection anymore, right? So like when I had that low external bottom to compare everything to, this isn't that bad. I can maintain a job, right? And I'm actually excelling at this job. Like I'm doing a great job. I may only show up 4 days a week, but like I'm actually doing a good job at this job, and I'm in a leadership position, and you know I'm training guys and this, that, the other, and I'm not doing that bad. But my alcoholism's progressing and progressing and progressing. And the spirituality aspect of this is progressing and progressing and progressing. And I end up with this girl. I have everything in my life that I think I always wanted, right? Like I have the hot girlfriend, right? I have the girlfriend that all your friends want, right? I thought that's what I wanted out of life. She has this son that I'm raising, so I have this another opportunity to be a dad, and I love that little boy to death. And I'm doing my best to be a dad, right? But I lost that job and I couldn't find the motivation to get up and do anything else but what I was doing. And she didn't want me to treat my alcoholism anymore. And so now I'm sneaking around to try to treat my alcoholism because this spirituality needs to be treated. I can't feel like this, right? I can't face the day without a drink, right? I'm crippled by too much fear to face anything. And all my problems are just piling up and piling up and piling up. And if I'm gonna deal with any of those, if I'm gonna chip away at any of those, I need a little something, right? So every chance I get, I'm going and I'm trying to treat my alcoholism, and it's not enough. I'm trying not to lose her because I think that my happiness is in these external things. I think that my happiness is her in this apartment with this family, right? I think that that's where I'm gonna get where I'm gonna rest satisfaction, right? Where I'm gonna force satisfaction out of this life is in these things, right? So I do stay away from it for a little bit. And just like Dr. Bob, I can stay away from alcohol for a little bit if you keep me heavily medicated, right? So I try that and I try to stay away from it, and that's okay for a little bit. But the times that I'm not able to treat my alcoholism, I'm dying inside. And every single day is a struggle. Am I doing on time? Sorry about that. Every single day is a struggle. And there's multiple days in a row sometimes where I can't go treat this thing. And all these things that I thought were blessings in my life, her and the little boy and all this, right? Like they start to become burdens. And if I can't treat my alcoholism, the TV will do, right? And I will stay in bed and just watch TV and anything that comes in my path because I can't deal with anything, because I can't deal to I don't know how to be around people without a substance, right? I don't know how to interact with people. I don't know how to be a good dad. That's for damn sure, right? I don't know how to be a good boyfriend, right? If you give me some alcohol, I can fake it. But like, I don't know how to do these things. So like, if you're in my way, you've got to get out of it because I can't bear to be in this. And I get to this point where I keep sneaking out to go treat my alcoholism because I can't just can't take it any further. And then it's like one day a week I'm going out and doing this, and those other 6 days I'm contemplating suicide every other day because I just can't bear it anymore. This can't be what life is supposed to be like, right? And she finally has enough, and she's like, "You gotta go." And I didn't know what to do. And I knew, like, I wasn't even, my tolerance for alcohol wasn't very high. I wasn't drinking that often, right? Like, but like, I knew that I was dying inside from this spiritual malady. And my brother got sober in Philly, I mean, in Jersey. So I called my brother and I was like, "Listen, dude, I need help. I don't know what to do." And I went to his house and ended up in this detox in New Jersey. And is the first time I went in somewhere and I didn't have any stipulations on where I went as far as treatment goes. It didn't matter. I'm all done with making demands. I don't care if you can't smoke there. I don't care if you can't have your phone there. Somebody else tell me where I'm going, because as soon as I start deciding things in my life, it all goes to crap, right? And there's this guy there from Philly, and he keeps suggesting I go to Philly. And he's like, "Hey, I know a lot of recovery houses in Philly. It's like I can get you in somewhere." And nothing's coming, as far as the casework is going, nothing's coming down the pipe, right? And I'm like, "I don't know, man. At least in Jersey, I have my brother, right? In Philly, I know nobody. Like, I need some sort of lifeline, you know?" And he keeps suggesting it and keeps suggesting it. And I finally asked him, I said, "Listen, man, what's the AA like in Philly?" And he said, "It's the best." And that's all I really needed to hear. And I was like, "This has got to be what, this is the only thing that anybody's suggesting to me. And I didn't come up with this. And I don't like it. So it's probably the, if I don't like it, it's probably the right thing, right?" So I end up at this recovery house in Philly, and I've been to, you name the type of treatment center, and I've been there, right? I've been to halfway houses, detoxes, 30-day programs, 60-day programs, 90-day programs. I mean, IOPs. I've been to everything, right? And I had never been a place like this. And I get there, and there's this board on the wall, and everybody's name's written on it. And everybody's got a home group. Everybody's got a sponsor. Everybody's got a service physician in that home group. And there's guys in the house that are sponsoring other guys. And that's like unheard of any other place that I've ever gotten sober, because, you know, I would hear you got to have a year, you got to have 5 years. All these stipulations on sponsorship, when it's okay to sponsor guys. And there's guys in this house with 60, 90 days sober sponsoring other guys. And I probably can't put into words my gratitude for that house. My first night there, they throw me in the car and they take me to this meeting. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Kensington, but it is, the whole entire town is a disaster. And we go to this meeting in like the heart of it, like the absolute heart of all that. There's so much despair and destruction and suffering down there. That's my first introduction to Philadelphia. But we walk into this meeting in this clubhouse that's just like run down. There's a black light and some string lights lighting the place. There's like instruments hanging from the ceiling. The place is, it's an interesting place to go, right? But we walk in there, and one of the guys in the house, there's a guy sitting over on a church pew, and he's clearly suffering. He's clearly going through withdrawals. And as soon as we walk into the door, one of the guys from my house beelines it over to this guy, sits down next to him, and starts talking to him. We ended up taking that guy to treatment that night, right? We gave that guy a ride to treatment. So these guys taught me how to be a good AA member, right? Like that demonstration right there, my first night there, set the tone of like what we do in this house, right? So I feel like you got to get a sponsor, right? So I asked this guy to sponsor me, and he reschedules on me a couple times, and I'm scared to death. And I know that fuse is lit, and I know that window is closing. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. He's rescheduled. He's busy. He's got illiterate kids. He runs a business. Like, he's just busy. It's no fault of his, right? Like, he doesn't know how afraid I am or how, like, I'm telling you, that fuse is a day or two sometimes. And I don't know how short it's going to be. I don't know when this window is going to close on me. And I'm like, I'm trying to save my life here. And that same man that walked across that clubhouse was sitting on the porch talking, and he says, I'll take you through the steps if you want. And this is a guy that's, I mean, maybe has 60, 90 days longer sober than me. And I take him up on the offer, and I haven't looked back since. I hit the ground running, and he believed in pace and momentum. And he believed in going through this work with some urgency. And within, I think it was 34 days sober, I was writing the fourth step. And he told me, you got 10 days to find a new sponsor. And I've been thinking about the fourth step a lot lately. And I don't think I've given it enough credit when I share my story. Because it was quick, right? And like, I don't think I've ever shared that, like, the fourth and fifth step gave me, it gave me this new relationship with pain. It gave me this new relationship with suffering, right? To where, like, if something feels bad, it doesn't mean it is bad, right? It gave me this new understanding of things that had happened in my life that, like, turned out needed to happen for good, right? And it gave me this completely new look on life. I went into this fifth step prepared, like, this dude is gonna either admire my alcoholism or he's gonna pity me, right? Because those are the two things that I love, right? You either need to feel bad for me or you need to look up to me, right? And I was prepared for court there, and he was better. That's it. He was better. Every argument I had, he broke down. And somewhere in that fifth step, I went from victim to the other side. I moved from that third column to that fourth column. And all of a sudden, these things didn't happen to me anymore, right? These people were spiritually sick if they harmed me. And really, it was all my fault, is what came out of that, is that all of these things were my fault. And I have this opportunity. My brother calls me probably right after I did my fifth step. And he says, listen, I'm going to New Hampshire if you want to go. And I lived in New Hampshire for a little bit. I had a bunch of amends in New Hampshire and in Massachusetts. And he's like, I'm leaving in a couple of days. And I talk to the house, and I'm like, listen, I don't have any amends here. Like, can I go? I need to do this. And against his better judgment, he tells me I can go. The house manager tells me I can go. And I had gotten a job at a roofing company right before that. And I had gotten laid off. He didn't need me anymore. He got slow. He didn't need me anymore. I was only there a couple weeks, right? So this is like right before I'm supposed to go. And I'm like, I go to my sponsor. I'm like, I don't think I can go. I don't think I can afford to go. Like, I just got laid off. I'm supposed to have a job. I got rent to pay at this, that, the other. And he's like, you can't afford not to go. You have to. You have no choice. You can't afford not to go. So I go anyway. And I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent at the recovery house when I get back. And to be honest with you, they don't really care. This is more important. And I'm up there for, I don't know, 4 to 6 days, something like that. And I spent half the time in New Hampshire and half the time in Boston. And I chased down every single amends that I possibly can in those times. The only thing I did was chase down amends. And I made as many amends as I could in that short period of time. And I don't know when exactly. I just told you, right? Like, there was a huge shift that stepped forward, but I didn't feel it then, right? Step nine is where I felt it. I felt that there was a change happening. I felt that that whatever this book was talking about, whatever all these things were that I was told to do, I understood that they were for a reason now. And I could feel the spiritual awakening. I made amends to a buddy of mine for some things, and I now sponsor that guy. Because I made that approach to him, and I made that amends, and he knew that I had solved the problem. I'm his Ebby, right? I was always the guy that was worse than he was, right? And if he ever got as bad as me, he'd take a look at it, right? And 6 months later, he was ready to take a look at it, and he called me for help. I made amends to another friend of mine, who ended up dying of an overdose 3 months later. And I never would have gotten the chance if that sponsor didn't tell me I have no choice, right? If that recovery house didn't allow me to go, if these people were more motivated but made more motivated by money than they were about getting people the help that they need, right? I would have never got to make that amends, right? It would have been a letter. And I started to repair some of these relationships, and I started paying money back. And when I came back, I was on fire, absolutely on fire. I think I made is 6 or 8 amends in those couple days. Like I said, they were sprawled across 2 different states, you know, like, and I didn't have a vehicle. I was public transportation and getting rides. And I mean, I was chasing these amends down. And I came back, and I was on fire. And you couldn't tell me this program didn't work at that point. And my sponsor starts taking me to this big book meeting that he's been doing at this other recovery house, right? We go in and we open up the book and we start reading through and we start breaking the book down line by line to these guys in this recovery house. And this isn't a recovery house like our recovery house. This is a recovery house that they're motivated more by money, property, and prestige. They have a very high turnover rate. But we go in there and we do our best to carry this message. And it was training ground for me, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm basically just listening while he's breaking down this book, and I jump in here and there, right? And we're at this one meeting, and this guy's he's a real pain in the ass. I'll just put it that way, right? And he's like raising his hand, kind of asking my sponsor to sponsor him, and my sponsor don't want to sponsor him, right? And I'm convinced that that's why he did it. He would have, but he didn't want to. He had somebody he could pawn him off on, right? So he says, Jesse will sponsor you. And I wasn't through the steps yet. I had just gotten back from making amends. We hadn't even read through step 10 yet. And I'm like, I agreed to it in the meeting, but afterwards I'm like, dude, what are you doing? I don't know how to sponsor this guy, right? And he threw me right into it. He said, are you willing to sponsor this guy? I said, yes. He said, well, God doesn't call the qualified, he calls the willing. He said, just, I said, I'm not through the steps yet. He said, don't worry, we'll stay ahead of him. Right? So I start meeting up with this guy, and I start going through the book, and I start, you know, same thing my sponsor did with me, right? Find yourself in these pages, turn statements into questions, and ask ourselves, is this me? Does this book fit my experience, right? And I start doing that, and he doesn't stick around, but now he's given me this this big book study. He stops doing it, and now I'm doing it just on my own. And I'm sponsoring all kinds of guys in this recovery house. And I'm starting to get involved in more service. I'm in a group rep, and I have a home group, and I'm always making coffee. I'm always chairing meetings, and I have no less than 3 sponsees at any point in time. And there is plenty of people to help in Philadelphia. And I get this call. My daughter lives with my aunt in Alabama, and I get this call from my aunt, and she tells me that she has cancer and asks me if I could take not just my daughter, but also a little boy that she's adopted. And I live in a recovery house, and I don't have no place to put these kids. And the answer has to be yes, but how, right? And I don't know how I'm going to do this thing. And I lean on the guys in my network, and I call a guy who went through a similar situation. He had to take custody of his daughter while he was still in a recovery house. And I didn't know that when I called him. I just called him because he was a good friend, right? And he said, I'll tell you the same thing that people told me when I was sitting in. He said, you sound exactly like I sounded. And he thanked me for bringing him back to that moment. And he said, he asked me if any of this was my doing, if I played a hand in this at all, if I tried to manage this, did I call her and ask to take these kids or any of that? And I said, no. He said, do you think this is God's plan? And I said, well, I didn't have anything to do with it, right? He said, well, do you trust in God's plan? And I said, I do. And, he said, then you just keep doing the next right thing. And I was a little bit skinnier then. I used to go on these runs, and that's how I would, when I was stressed and full of fear, that's how I would get connected with God. And I go on this run, and I'm listening to this song, and it's talking about like the sky's falling. And like I get this image of Chicken Little in my head running around with like this little acorn helmet. And I'm like, that's the sky's not falling today. Right. It's not falling right now. Right. And then I hear this voice. It sounds like my voice. Right. But it's worded weird. Right. It doesn't say trust his plan. It says trust my plan. And call it what you want. I choose to believe that was God speaking. And I trust this plan, and I try to figure out. And I had started dating this girl from Virginia in this period before this. And we were visiting on weekends and this, that, the other. And she had her house on the market. She was going to sell her house, move to Philadelphia. We were going to get a place together. And I'm like, I don't really know what to do with these kids. I understand. We haven't been dating very long. And this isn't going to work because I have these 2 kids now. I don't know what I'm going to do, but this isn't going to work because this is long distance. And like, I have to figure this out. Right. And she's like, no, we need to figure this out. And she keeps telling me, I'll take my house off the market. You guys come here. I'll take my house off the market. You guys come here. And this is feeling too much like my normal MO, right? And I'm very reluctant to do this because that's what I do. I build a little bit of a life. I find a girl with a place to live, and I go burn her and my life to the ground. So I'm very reluctant to do this. And again, I ask myself, like, did I try to manage this? Did I play a part in trying to put this together? I didn't try to hint around for her to offer to take our house off the market. I didn't try to hint around for her to invite us all there. I actually did the opposite. I actually tried to run from it so she didn't have to deal with any of it, right? And I trust in God's plan. I'm like, this just has to be what it is. So I come here, and I'm going to come before the kids get here because I need to get established with AA, and I'm running out of time, and I'm not as far as I'd like to be. So I come first. I need to get a job. I need to get established with AA, blah, 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 right? And I pass all my sponsees off to guys closer to them. I get them with good sponsors, and I give up all my service positions, and I get prepared to go down here. And, you know, I think I'm going to do God's work, and, right, like, I'm going to be the hero to this story, and all of a sudden my ego starts to build up in this, right? And I move down here, and I go to the first meeting, the meeting that's closest to me, and it is not the AA that I was looking for. And like, I've lived all up and down the East Coast, right? But like, I'm in the middle of the country now, and I'm pretty sure this dude just pulled up to this meeting on a tractor. And like, they are not talking about what I think they should be talking about, and I'm going to need to make some changes around here, right? And and I call my sponsor, and he's like, hey, man, nobody invited you to that meeting. You're not going there and making changes. But anyway, I start venturing out, and I'm like, I need to find this brand of AA, right? Like, I need to find people talking about the solution, because I'm petrified. I'm scared. I don't know how to be a dad. This little boy has special needs. I don't know how to take care of that, right? I don't know where I am. I'm in a new place. And I am just riddled with fear. And I keep searching for the AA that I'm looking for. And I'm getting further and further away from my house. And like, I'm used to being able to throw a rock and hitting three meetings, right? And at least two of those meetings are talking about solution. And it's not like this. And there's only so many meetings you can go to in a week. And I'm getting discouraged. And I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to make it. And I don't know what to do. And every meeting I go to, I'm going in, I'm raising my hand, and I said, hey, I'm new here. I just moved here, and I'm scared to death. Somebody put me in service. If there's coffee to be made, somebody needs a speaker, somebody's looking for a sponsor. If the floors need to be swept, just somebody put me into service. And I go to four or five meetings, and nobody's put me in service. And I'm real scared. And I finally go to this meeting in Charlottesville, and the place is kind of bumping. It's late. There's a bunch of young kids there. They got music playing. It's like a joyful crowd. I'm like, okay, maybe this will work. And I raise my hand and I say, I'm new here. I just moved here. I'm scared to death. Somebody please put me in service. If anybody's looking for a sponsor or a speaker for a meeting or coffee to be made or a floor to be swept, please somebody put me in service, because so much of my sobriety was based off of service up to this point. I know I need to help somehow somebody. I don't care how little, I need to be in service. And a guy pulls me aside after the meeting. He's like, hey, we're doing this New Year's Eve thing. Can you speak for us? Absolutely. So now that buys me a few days, right? Like, I can go to these other meetings, but like, I'm going to be in service in a couple days. And I get a little bit of hope back. And I'm like, all right, maybe this is going to work. Maybe this is going to be okay, because they're talking about sponsorship in that meeting. And they're talking about the big book. And like, okay, I might've found it. I just needed to find it, right? And I go to that New Year's Eve thing, and I'll probably never be able to do as good of a job as I did that night. But I spoke, and somebody came up to me after the meeting, and he said, hey, how serious of a home group are you looking for? He said, it's not for everybody. And I said, it sounds like my type of place. And from that point on, I joined Common Solution, and as soon as I could, I tried to be a service to this Common Solution. And I started to build a little bit of a network. And all of a sudden, things changed. And the kids weren't coming anymore. And now my whole purpose for coming here is gone. And I'm questioning why God brought me here. And I don't understand why. And I'm on the outskirts of this network. I'm on the outskirts of Alcoholics Anonymous here. And all of a sudden, I'm scared again. And now I'm questioning the only thing that's kept me sober up until this point. And I don't understand what my purpose is here. Why was I supposed to move here? I do believe that God told me to move here, but this isn't the role that he promised he was assigning me. And the first time I shared about this was the last time I spoke, and I really didn't know how much of it to share from the podium, because some of it you just don't share from a podium. But part of it you do, right? Like, there's people in here that may be questioning what they thought God was telling them to do, right? And I think that I misunderstood the role that he was wanting me to play, right? I'm in the world to play the role that he assigns. But I put this label of hero of this story on that role, right? And like, my role was just to play dad. It wasn't to play hero of this story. I wasn't there to save the day, right? So the kids come for the summer and then they got to go home. And I don't know what to do at the time. And my sponsor at the time was back in Philly and he had relapsed. And now I'm down here with no sponsor, and I'm only going to one meeting a week. I'm only going to the Common Solution because I have these kids here for the summer. And like, I'm busy and I got this new job and all of these things that are pulling me away from Alcoholics Anonymous and all of these things that are pulling me away from God. And I don't know how close to a drink I was, but I know that I truly believe you're always heading away from a drink or heading towards a drink, right? I don't think there's any coasting in this program. It's one direction or the other. And I wasn't heading away from a drink. So I know I was heading towards a drink, and I was scared, and I knew that I was heading towards a drink, and I didn't know how to stop it. And my sponsor relapsed. I'm like, I got it. He had relapsed previously, and I still kept him as my sponsor. And he had relapsed again, and I was like, I need somebody here. So I asked this guy to sponsor me, and I got back into the work. And I knew that I asked the right guy, because our first conversation, the first thing he did was assess my circle and triangle. How many alcoholics are you talking to a day? How many meetings are you going to during the week? And let's start reading the book and going through these steps again, right? All three sides of this triangle. And tells me I'm already talking to alcoholics, but some of them need to be alcoholics here, right? Because I need to start building a bond with you guys and not just keeping the bond alive with the guys back home. That's important too. They're still alcoholics, but I'm still on the outskirts if I'm not building a network here, right? And I need to start going to more than one meeting, because as far as I can tell, a newcomer's never walked by my couch, right? So I need to get to some more meetings. But that's the thing, right? Like, there's gonna come a time when there's nobody to help. And there's going to come a time where you don't have this network to lean on, because people get busy and they may not answer the phone, right? But like, there's never going to be a time that it's not, you don't have God to lean on, right? So I trust, even though I'm questioning God, I trust in God during this whole thing. And I get with the sponsor, and I start going through the work again, and I start a steel on steel group. I'm not going to explain what that is. It's something that came out of Mark Houston. But I start building a bond with a few guys. And I start going to more meetings. And I get on the other side of an inventory from what I believe just happened, where I'm the victim. This thing happened to me. Oh, woe me. Poor me. I was supposed to be the hero, and you guys just don't understand. Right? And I get on the other side of that inventory. And all of a sudden, I realized that, like, I just misunderstood the role. And I had an amazing summer with both of those kids. And I built a bond with that little girl that can't be broken by anybody else's words or anything else. So I'm running out of time here, and I'm pretty much wrapped up anyway, but she's back up here for the summer again. And we just had the most amazing weekend. We went to Virginia Beach, and we rented jet skis, and we flipped jet skis, and we went parasailing, and like all of these things. And when she's back home, she calls me. Like, she calls me, right? Like, I'm not always having to push that. She wants to talk to me. She wants to be a part of my life, right? I didn't realize that what God was doing with this situation was showing me why this woman that's in my life needs to be my wife, right? I didn't realize that without her stepping up the way she did, I don't know if I would have known that this is the woman that I want to spend the rest of my life with, right? Without this program, when I went and asked her parents' permission, I was never the take me home to mama type. Do you know what I'm saying? And I barely got the sentence out, and her dad goes, yes, immediately. I barely said, I'd really like to ask your daughter to marry me. And I mean, marry me is all I said. And he looks at me and says, yes. Like, God and you guys made me that person, right? This program made me a dad to that little girl. I wouldn't be able to be a good dad, a good boyfriend, a good fiance, a good husband, a good son, none of these things without God and AA, without going through these steps. And that's pretty much my time. Thanks for letting me share.